Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today. Tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. Now on with the show. Today, we welcome Ryan Sagian, a Los Angeles-based interior designer who is blazing a trail in the industry with his fresh perspective of business and his fearless approach to design. In this episode, we discuss confidence, ego, and pushing boundaries. A proud millennial, Ryan is on the forefront of a movement to rebrand the business of design with an emphasis on diversity, self-empowerment, and raw talent. If you're a young designer struggling to be taken serious in the industry, this episode is for you. Ryan breaks down his journey honestly, from the heart, and with a fire that will motivate you to persevere and succeed. Let's get started. Well, Ryan, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
How exciting. Back in LA.
Back in LA, because you're from OC.
I'm from OC and haven't been in LA in a while, so it was nice to come out to Los Angeles. We are safely distanced, and we're doing this interview in a beautiful showroom, which you'll probably tell us more about later in the podcast interview. But I want to start by learning a little bit about you. I always like to learn about our featured design professionals. Tell us a little bit about you and who you are. Who is Ryan Sagian?
Ryan Sagian is a 28-year-old Iranian-American who's living his dream, doing what he loves most. I started in the industry when I was 15 in high school. It was the most incredible step I ever took in my life, and it became the biggest part of my identity and saved me time and time again.
15, that's ambitious. Yeah. You knew very early on.
Very. Like when I was really, really little, mm-hmm. all I would do is rearrange the house and fix the curtains and move furniture around, set the table. My mom loved it. My dad didn't. He said, your sister should do this. Your mom should do this. Stop, stop, stop. But it's funny because in so many aspects of my life, I got very scared and listened to him. Mm-hmm. But that was the one thing that even if he like said, you know, don't do it or gave me some pushback, for I don't know where the will came from, I still did it.
Wow. That's awesome.
Always.
Yeah. I mean, that's passion right there is what
passion,
it is.
Passion, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think so many designers, when we talk about like, when did you know? And typically we can go pretty far back. But I think there's a common sentiment also among designers that even when you knew, did you really know that it was a career path? Did you know that it was an option, that it was going to be something that you could pursue and actually make a living doing? I think that's where a lot of designers, we were at a loss for information at that time, and we had to learn that. When did you realize that this is something that you could really pursue as a career?
Always.
Really?
I never thought otherwise. When I was really little, like really little, and I didn't know what a designer was, I thought I wanted to be a maid because all I was doing was cleaning up my room and organizing it and making it look really pretty.
Right.
But no, I knew that it was a career. I always thought if you do what you love, it's impossible for you not to succeed. And that's what they always told me growing up. Mm-hmm. One thing I was lucky about was most Iranian Jews, they force their children to go into the academic industries or go into medicine or go into law or real estate. And my father himself does what he loves. He's a builder and an architect. And he's in love with his career.
Right.
And he always wanted me to do what I love most. So that mentality was always there. And I always said, hey, you know, even when I was like thinking of being a maid, I'm like, maybe I'll run a company doing resorts, like their housekeeping. Right. It was just always thinking that if you do what you love, it'll be great.
That's awesome. That is such a good lesson. Such a good lesson. Kudos to your parents.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Tell us a little bit about your business. So what, tell us about your business model. How big is your team and what's like your sweet spot? What's your typical project that you work on now?
Our team is six. Mm-hmm. We do residential. I've dabbled in a little bit of everything because I've always wanted to experience, like I crave experience. But residential has always been like my heart and soul. And ground up is always, it's like our typical project from the beginning all the way to the end.
Right.
We'll do projects that are just furniture phase or just construction phase. Mm-hmm. But I obviously tend to be selective and want clients who will let me do everything from the beginning to the end. Right. So it's all my vision.
That's awesome. No, it's good to look at the big picture.
Yeah.
You know, take it from, you know, literally construction all the way to the decorating phase.
And yeah. And, you know, our industry, it takes a good year to 2 years to finish a project.
Right.
And within that year to 2 years, I'm also evolving. So having the project be all mine allows me to constantly be not changing it, but making it more current. And as the year goes by and I learn more and I find more, updating it and updating it.
Kind of funny thing about new construction, since you brought that up, because I agree with that. And I worked on new construction for so many years and they do take time.
So
the difference between your niche of new construction versus other business models that are just kind of like turn them and burn them, decorate them. You know, what you're envisioning and what you're putting on paper may not come to fruition for maybe 2 years from now. So you have to always be ahead of the curve.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes so freaking long.
It takes a long time.
It takes so long. mind you, when you get a project, you're not working on it every day for that year.
Sure.
There's the schematic phase and then there's sourcing. Then I'm done for months. They're getting their permits. They're breaking ground. They're digging. I don't come back until they're actually now tiling and fabricating and installing. So there is a good, and that's why when people say, how do you take 13, 14 projects at a time? I'm like, dude, they're at different phases.
Yeah, you got
to
pace them.
You know,
them
when I'm waiting for them to now break ground because I've already done all my sourcing, I need something else to distract me. So
exactly. Now, when you come back, do you find yourself making changes,
having been
exposed to new materials or new products that weren't available to you at that time?
Yes.
So all of a sudden it's like, hey guys, we got to have a sit down.
Yeah. But you see, those changes are easy changes. So when I'm first sourcing, I never usually change the stone or the mosaics.
Right.
Or the millwork, even for that matter.
The timeless.
Like those
things.
Orders are put in. But when they say, well, what lighting are we going to use or what mirrors are we going to use? I'm like, I don't know. Let's see what comes out by then. Like we might change the mirror. But I source something to give them an idea. Like I want a gold mirror or I want a wood mirror. But by the time we're now buying it, I might have found something at a trade show or at a vintage shop where I'm like, look how badass this is, you know?
Sure. Yeah, you never know what you're going to see in Milan when we can go back to Milan.
Oh, that was the best show I've ever been to in my whole life.
I think everybody's dying to go.
Dying
I haven't had
go.
An opportunity to go, but it's on my list. It's on my priority
it's
list.
It's a good
for
one.
Sure.
That one's a really good one.
Yeah.
Crazy
really
good
exciting.
One. You have to take a lot of Advil because you're going to have so much pain in your legs for all the walking.
Right.
But it is a great show.
You get your steps in for the year.
Oh, it's amazing.
So let's talk about your team really quick. Going back to your team. So you said there's six people.
There's six people.
There's six of you.
I'm also, look, I'm 28 years old.
Right.
I'm not going to pretend I know it all. And I'm also growing and evolving and I'm making my mistakes as I go. Mm-hmm. When I first started, it was just me and one assistant.
Got it.
Then what I would do is I would rotate interns, you know, try to keep my overhead as low as possible. Now we have two amazing project managers and designers. Then I have one. He was my assistant. He's been with me the longest. Now he's like, I don't even know what title I would give him. I would say senior designer.
Yeah.
Then we have our office design assistant. We have two of those, actually. Two office design assistants. We have a biller who does all of the billing for the orders. And that's it. Okay. Is that six?
Yeah. It takes a village.
Usually
it really
I
does.
Have interns, but right now I can't. And then my furniture. So my firm, like we're sitting right now in the conference room in the showroom. Mm-hmm. But this is my firm, like my studio within the showroom.
Right.
So then the showroom is run by my furniture partner, Jubin Torkin, who owns J. Alexander. Mm-hmm. And his employees are, he's got four in sales and then a factory of amazing, talented craft. What do you call them? Craftsmen. Craftsmen, yep. Who knock out all the furniture.
They do amazing work. I have experience with the showroom and they do incredible work.
They do great work.
What a great concept to have your design studio within a showroom. To just be surrounded by everything fresh and new and beautiful, but also to have that direct connection, that direct resource, literally on a daily basis.
It's so good. And you don't get bored. You know, I can't be in an office building. Mm-hmm. I like the excitement here of random people walking in. And,
right.
Just fun. And it's just, you feel alive. And it's the work environment that makes a big difference in your design.
Oh, yeah.
Like right now, I'm redoing the actual office. We got new lighting and all new lighting, new wallpapers coming in, new desks and everything. But right now it looks so bad, it affects me. When you're in the middle of changes and it's like a mess, it affects you. So your environment's so important.
It's very important. And that's why I think that it's so smart to be, you know, surrounded by design. It's got to be so inspiring on a daily basis. It's got to be exciting to come here to work.
It's so fun. Yeah.
You know, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You've come a long way at 28. You know, that's a good sized team. You seem to have it pretty dialed in. Over the course of the years, obviously you didn't grow that team overnight. It took time. What were some of the lessons that prompted you to expand your team? Like what happened that said, you know what, I need another project manager. I can't do this anymore with just one project manager. You know what? I need someone that just does sourcing and procuring and purchasing because I can't do that.
What happened was I started turning away projects because I didn't have the bandwidth. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I don't know why, because like once you get to know me, I'm like very confident in my work. But I don't know why it was hard for me to just take my prices higher. To do an increase. It's like, dude, like, why don't you know your worth? Like, stop doing that. So it took a little push, took my prices up so that I could afford to hire more people because I really couldn't handle it anymore. It was affecting my social life, my own happiness. I was like always, always, always working. Mm. And I just realized if you pay someone X amount of dollars, but they help you finish it quicker so you can make X amount of dollars, that's a big advantage. So it started with one. I had one bad experience, so that freaked me out and I didn't want to do it again. I was like, you know what? This industry, no one is going to be as good as you. Just don't do it. And then it wasn't until I found people that I really, really, really felt safe with.
Right. It's all about trust.
And one thing that really helped was hiring people at the beginning on a probation, what is it called?
Probation.
Probationary period. Mm-hmm. So I do like a 60 to 90 day where I'm like, you know, you're hired, but within 60 to 90 days, if you're not like doing what I need or really helping me and we're not helping each other, then let's just like forget this. So I don't feel like I'm fully committing to a salary for a year. Mm-hmm. And after those 6 months, 60 days, I'm like, okay, you're good. Let's put you in full time.
Well, that's smart because you don't really know what that individual brings to the table until they're really in the mix. Everybody looks great on paper. Mm-hmm. And I could sit here and I can sell myself to you all day long and tell you how great I am. But until you see me in action, until you see me interacting with clients or pulling a scheme for a project or interacting with the builder or interacting on site, you don't really know what I have to offer.
At all. And one thing is I need a doer. Mm-hmm.
Not a talker.
No, I need a doer. And I really need someone. I have, when you're working with really wealthy people, you're dealing with a lot of demanding stuff. I was about to say the S word. Lot of demanding stuff. So you've got to not take it personal. And I have an ego. We all do. Mm-hmm. It's the one thing that screws me up, especially in breakups. But when it comes to work, you have to drop it bad. Like, yeah, you have to really drop it, and you have to be egoless and not take things too personally, because if you do, you're going to always, always be sad.
Yeah. It's like self-sabotage.
Yeah. I've had an employee that she left 3 months ago. She couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
It was just, she couldn't handle it. Yeah. And it's not for everybody. We're in the service industry.
Completely. The luxury service industry, no less.
Exactly. And it's not just me. At first I thought maybe it's just me, because I don't know. Again, an insecure thought. Maybe it's just me. And I spoke to a lot of my colleagues and a lot of my friends. And no, it's not. I've had friends, celebrity clients who have driven them crazy, or billionaires. And it happens to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. Well, so you brought up the luxury market and the type of clientele that you cater to. And I think that it's worth exploring and talking about a little bit more. I come from the same background. And it is different, but it's the same. You make a good point when you said, though, that you have to rise to the occasion for this caliber of client because their expectations are very high. Mm-hmm. I think every consumer's expectations are high, no matter where they fall as far as level of investment. But you, being a young man in Los Angeles and catering to this level of client, where does that confidence come from to relate and equate to those clients?
I always tell them, I'm not going to pretend I know what I'm talking about when it comes to real estate, when it comes to medicine, when it comes to finance. I don't even know how to run my own finances. You know, I have an accountant and I have advisors and so on. But when it comes to interior design, I'm always right. I said, we may differ subjectively with the taste of something here and there, but in general, I'm always right. I know scale and proportion. I know my furniture history. Mm-hmm. I got my bachelor's in interior design. I know my building codes and regulations. I know my materials. I know what's durable, what's not. I've been living, eating, breathing design since I was 15 years old.
Right.
I think that's where the confidence comes from. 5 years at a firm, 4 years getting a degree, a father who has been in construction my whole life.
Right.
It's second nature to me, this industry. All of that together, I think, is what gave me the confidence in what I do. And really just accepting the fact that this is my niche, and I'm not going to pretend I know what I'm talking about when it comes to other stuff, but when it comes to this, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I like that you come from that place of honesty. And the fact that you rely on your experience and your education and your passion, that's not ego. All of those things are fact. You know,
yeah.
You know your scale, you know your proportion, you've been around the block, you know what works and what doesn't work. Now, will there be a difference in opinion? Possibly.
Yeah.
Probably. But you're coming from a place of confidence, you're coming from a place of knowledge and information, which I think is super smart. And I think a lot of design professionals, especially young design professionals, struggle with that. Like, how am I going to stand in front of this individual who is A, older than me, and B, has a lot more experience on a business level than I do? But like you said, you're not there to talk about medicine or math.
Yeah.
You're there to talk about design.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure whatever you do is great and whatever else I do is great, but right now it's all about the design.
Yeah.
And that's my jam.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm glad that you shared that. One of the reasons that I really wanted to talk to you is when we spoke on the telephone originally, we kind of had this conversation about young design professionals, this millennial kind of generation, and the rap that I feel and that a lot of people think that millennials have. And we don't need to get into that because I think everybody knows what that rap is. What I'm excited about is...
What's the rap?
You know, it's just that kind of that entitlement.
Yeah.
Instant gratification, not willing to work hard, want mm-hmm. things given to them. But you are the complete opposite of that. You know, you are the epitome of initiative and hard work and passion. And so I want to talk about what it means to you to be a successful business person at your age as a millennial, and what message you want to send out to like other young designers to kind of step up and be that person as well.
Okay, so there's a few things. In our industry in general is very backwards. Mm-hmm. It's always been, you know, think interior design and architecture, you think the older male draftsman architect who sits at his drafting table, who's been doing this forever, or you think the Dorothy Drapers or the Elsa DeWolves in a more mature female role, mm-hmm. or again, some 40-something-year-old gay man who's just fabulous, like your mom's best friend.
Right.
It's very hard for people, and I understand because this isn't a t-shirt, it's not a pair of jeans. These are expensive purchases, and usually people don't want to put trust in a younger 20-something-year-old designer. Mm-hmm. So with that said, it's been very hard for me to build a name for myself and gain the respect and the even get editorial coverage from shelter publications and so on. With that mentality being so backwards, it's filtered into the actual, I don't know how I would explain it, like hierarchy or system of press or, well, it's press, right? I would say press.
Yeah.
There's that, photograph the project, gotta wait, don't post it anywhere, don't post it on Facebook, don't post it on Instagram, wait till the editorial calendar of whatever publication is picking it up to finally publish it. And let's be real, like behind me you see all of these magazines, I use them time and time to tear off, but I always go on Pinterest.
Right.
It's very rare that I get a magazine and go through it. So what I ended up realizing over time was what worked better for me was not waiting to get published because that's not going to make me quote unquote famous or get me a new job or a new client. It's just going to look good for me to take a picture of that publication and post it on Instagram.
It would make for a good social media post.
So I went back I backtracked and I'm like, I'm just going to post everything that I do and not care on Instagram. And that's where everybody's going to see it and share it. You can't share a magazine page.
Right.
You know? And I'll get more jobs that way. And that's always been my model. Post, post, post. And if somebody wants to publish you, they'll reach out to you.
Right.
Or you'll have so much work at one point where you'll keep one or two for a publication. The rest you'll just keep posting, which is what I'm doing now.
Sure. But that's a luxury. I mean, you've got to be in a place where you can actually stash work and still have plenty to share.
Yeah, but with time that happens. That's why I also tell millennials, again, they want it now, they want it now, they want it now. This isn't an industry that you're going to go into right away to make money. Mm-hmm. So if that's your plan, go do something else. Go do something with a quicker turnaround. This is not a quick turnaround, and it's not a lot of money at first, at all, actually. Your stock and trade is your work. So at the beginning... And I don't come from a very rich father. I'm really not just saying that. I did everything on my own. And at the beginning, I would do a lot of projects for free. My first project when I was charging was $50 an hour.
Right.
And even after like 10 hours added up, she's like, do I have to pay you for 10 hours? Like, what did you do in these 10 hours? You know, like, why did it take you so long? But I would never take that back because it was those images of my work that I did for free that then gave me the portfolio that had merit for the design fees I wanted to charge in the future, you know?
That also goes back to dropping the ego again. That's another good example of like leaving that ego at the door.
The ego still comes sometimes, though, I'm telling you.
Of course, we all have it, like, but there's a time and a place for it.
Exactly.
And I think younger people need to really kind of embrace that and respect it in an effort to get to the place that you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
You know?
And educate yourself. You know, a lot of people... Look, you don't have to have your degree in interior design. You cannot teach someone talent or taste. That's like innate. Like for me, designing is intuitive. But you can teach someone the skills and the tools to take that gift of yours, which is that innate quality of talent and taste, and make it into an incredible business. You need to know furniture history. Like, you need to know your Jean Royers and your Jean Prouvés, and you need to know your architects, your Frank Lloyd Wrights. You need to know where it all started and how it shaped. And you need to understand materials. You can't be bad at scale and proportion. You can't make a chair that's 20 inches seat height.
it's not going to work.
You need to educate yourself.
Yeah.
And you'll naturally become so much more confident.
Right.
If you do so.
I think one of the benefits of the newer generation of design of people in your age group is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but your perception of continued education, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in a classroom. Like you just said, you know, you don't necessarily have to go to design school. And I think that younger designers need to realize that if you feel like you need to do that, then do it. But there's so many other ways to get that information.
Exactly.
There's so many avenues and opportunity to continue to learn information and apply it to your craft and your business.
Exactly. Go on masterclass. The only time you should get your bachelor's in interior design is if you're graduating high school and you want to get a bachelor's degree and go to college in general.
Right.
But if you've already gotten your bachelor's and now you've realized your passion and you want to go into it and you've already finished your four-year degree, go to UCLA Extension, go to Santa Monica City College, go to a community college and take AutoCAD courses, a few furniture history classes. And
then get your butt in a design studio.
Intern, and don't think. But, you know, I can't say don't think about money whenever you've already graduated and you have college bills to pay, but really cannot think about money. I don't know how else to say it. Like, you have to do it for the love.
Yeah, I think as a creative, there are sacrifices that we just have to make in order to pursue, you know, what it is that we love. I think it's pretty typical in the creative industry, whether you're designing or doing anything creative.
Mm-hmm.
But I hear you. You still got to pay the bills.
Yep. Totally.
So, Ryan, you've shared so openly and candidly, and I really appreciate it. We have some signature questions that I would be remiss not to ask, starting with the secret to your survival. So what would you say is the secret to your survival, which really means kind of the secret to your success at this point?
Loving people and standing beside them. Really, truly. Because whatever you put out comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Love your clients, love your friends, love your staff. And above all else, love yourself.
Right, right. You can't do it without that.
And that, again, translates to loyalty. Just like think with love. Love people and stand beside
them. I love that answer. No one's ever answered quite like that. And that really is the foundation for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. What would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then when you started?
I think that everything is going to be all right. Because mm-hmm. when you're younger, you're just worried about if it's going to work out and if it's not going to work out. And if it's a mistake hiring this person or investing in this or doing that and that. There's a lot of worry and there's still worry. So I don't know why I'm not reminding myself from time again, like just, you know, live in the moment and be present because the future doesn't exist and the past is gone.
Right.
But just, I wish I could tell myself everything is going to be all right and just relax.
Yeah.
And I need to tell myself that now too.
I think we need to tell ourselves that every day.
Yeah.
I think we all burn so much time worrying. And in hindsight, we always tell ourselves.
But it's like praying for the worst possible outcome.
Yeah.
You can't worry.
Yeah. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
How would you say that you pay it forward in the design community? I take that very seriously because I think every designer has an opportunity to pay it forward.
Pay it forward.
Share information with fellow designers and help grow this community. How would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
By pushing boundaries and breaking the rules and showing people time and time again on my social media platform that I'm a badass at 28 and you can do it too. And when I started, there was no one to look at that one was more ethnic, two was young, and three was successful, all three of those. It was never something I would see, and it was very intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I want to show another Middle Eastern guy in the U.S. or all over the world that you can do it too. Or another young person who's like, maybe I need to wait, maybe I'll go get a job doing something else, and then when I'm older, go into the industry. Like, no, you could literally do it. You can do anything.
Right.
And I really want to be that. I would love to be the voice for my generation.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. So tell us how we can learn more about you. What is your website? What is your Instagram so that people can follow you and learn more about you there?
It's all my name. So www.ryansagian.com.
Got it.
And at Ryan Sagian on Instagram.
Easy. I'm going to put a link in the show notes so that everyone can go right to the website. And then we'll be talking about you with all of our followers on Instagram when we release this podcast episode. So they'll be able to find you pretty easily.
I can't wait.
Me too. Thanks so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to sharing with everyone.
As am I.
I was excited to speak with Ryan for so many reasons. One of which is to emphasize the point that no matter what it looks like on the surface, there is no such thing as an overnight success in this business. This 28-year-old may be killing it now, but don't forget that it was 13 years in the making. Sure, Ryan may very well encompass some of the characteristics that are common to his generation, but when it comes to business, he's all about patience, competence, and raw talent. I appreciate Ryan's candid exchange about ego and how it has no place in the business of design. Along with comparison and fear, they can be the most self-sabotaging words in life and business. A growing business can be exciting and a little bit scary. I'm so glad that Ryan shared his realization that it was time to raise his prices and bring on some help to take his business to the next level. A good team member is equal parts trust and talent. These traits must be exhibited in real life, not on paper. Hopefully, some of you will adopt Ryan's practice of probationary hiring as you grow your team. Remember, life and business is a trial and error process that should not be rushed. Slow and steady wins the race, as Ryan would say. I'm so glad to add Ryan to our tribe of influential design professionals, and I look forward to sharing his impact on the evolution of our industry and a new generation of creative entrepreneurs. Thank you for joining us for another conversation about life, leadership, and the business of design. We're collecting rave reviews for 2021, so take a moment to rate us on iTunes and tell us why you love Design Biz Survival Guide. We also love your suggestions and feedback, so go ahead, DM us on Instagram or email me direct at rick@designbizsurvivalguide.com. Thanks everyone, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.